I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hello and welcome to the 325th edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast on the Believe Network and MikeFarrellSports.com, presented by BetOnline.ag. Once again, I'm Matt Perkins. No coach with us here tonight, but we still have the third amigo in the second city, a man who will be at Wrigley Field this weekend, but not for a baseball game, because let's face it, it's the Cubs. They're never playing this late in the year, and it's November. Doesn't matter. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Accounting, Hayden Fry. I mean, Josh Cook.
Well, how you doing over there, Matt? It's good to be here. Coming straight to you from Texas. How we doing?
Coach Fry, I didn't realize that you were still down there in Texas. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, my Hawkeyes, we're going to throw some exotics in this week. We got some exotics. We're going to do a reverse to Timmy Dwight. And then we're going to do a little flea flicker. We're going to hand it off to Tavian Banks, and he's going to flip it on back to the quarterback, and then we'll throw it down the field. I just hope we don't hurt Pat Fitzgerald's boys too bad. You know, we broke his leg before the Rose Bowl.
Well, I hope that for those boys' sake that you don't do anything too out of hand. But before we're going to talk about everything going on, I don't even know how long I'm gonna be able to keep. I can't keep a straight face. Who am I kidding? With if you're not watching this on YouTube, you need to be. Doesn't matter. Before we get into everything going on this weekend at Wrigley Field and much more, want to remind the good folks listening at home or wherever they may be that they should be over at betonline.ag for all of their online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at betonline.ag. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Coach Fry, we're going to start with one big takeaway each from this past weekend. Before we get into breaking down the games like we usually do here, And my takeaway remains sort of the overall takeaway from the season. The Pac-12 is the most fun conference in the country. That has not changed whatsoever in my eyes. In fact, it just gets better and better every single weekend, it seems. You know, throughout the weekend, Washington Stanford was a much closer game than we all expected. Oregon beat the brakes off of Utah, which we were not expecting to see. But I think Utah not having Cam Rising really finally came back to bite them in the butt for the first time really badly all season. Oregon put on an absolute clinic in the first half. Arizona is becoming one of the most interesting teams in the country. They've won 4 of 5 and seem to have really found something here with Noah Fifita at quarterback. The scrambling freshman can, you know, seem to make something out of nothing routinely. USC tried to give a game away to Cal, 50-49, which was just one of the more absurd finishes of the weekend. You know, Cal goes for two and the win, and they fail there. And then Arizona State beat a Washington State team that is now in a bit of a free fall, I must say, Josh, because they started out the year so strong. They had that win over Oregon State, who just beat Arizona. And ever since, though, they have been reeling. They've lost 4 in a row, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon, and Arizona State now. And it's really tough to figure out what is happening up there on the Palouse. And UCLA, their defense really held down Colorado for most of that game. The Bruins, going with a little 3-quarterback rotation, still managed to win 28-16. So, but basically, what I'm trying to say is that you look through the Pac-12, there's not a bad game in there from last weekend. It seems like all these teams are competitive with each other. Even, you know, your lowly Cals and Stanfords and what we thought Arizona, Arizona State, they're being competitive. It is great football being played up and down the conference, and it's still a damn shame that there will be no more Pac-12 next year. So what is your takeaway from this past weekend?
Well, you know, I was looking at my two last programs. I was coaching there, Matt, and North Texas State, they came up just short in a really good barn burner, 45-42 against Memphis there. I don't know what that was. Was that Metro League football? What is that? Was this American thing? I don't know what it is. And then SMU, future ACC member, they dropped 69 on somebody. Oh, my goodness. Woo, I integrated both schools. Well, I tried to integrate SMU, and they ran me out for trying to sign some black players. But anyway, I digress. How about that team out east, Iowa State? Second place of the Big 12. We all thought that was going to happen. Good job, Dan McCarney. You know, part of my coaching tree. Of course, he's coaching them up. Makes sense. And then how about Virginia Tech? Yeah, they control their destiny in the ACC. How about that? You know what? Actually, no, ACC, Virginia Tech, they're independent. They're still independent. There we go. Anyway, I think they must have hired Beamer's son there. Frank Beamer's getting up there in age. They probably hired his son. But yeah, Iowa State, Virginia Tech, turning their seasons around.
Good for them. that Coach Pry, I don't think he's off of your coaching tree last time I checked, but you never know. Maybe it's one of the deeper branches that we just don't know about over there with Coach Pry, who does have the Hokies looking pretty good as we head in here to the stretch run of the college football season. That begins this weekend, week 10. We've got 5 games we're going to run through here, and we're going to start back down in the Big 8, I mean the Big 12, with Kansas State and Texas. They are 2 of the 5 teams who sit in the 5-way tie atop the conference at 4-1. K-State comes in having outscored their last 2 opponents 82-3, while Texas is starting Malik Murphy because Quinn Ewers is still injured. Coach, do you think that Sark and them boys will be ready to and be able to keep up with Kansas State, a team that's really clicking on all cylinders right now with a relatively inexperienced quarterback?
Well, of course, you know, my old offensive coordinator, Bill Snyder, he's coaching them up. That makes sense. Of course, they'd put up those offensive points. The problem for Texas, though, is what you pointed out, their quarterback play. They're going in with a new boy, of course. you know, one start under him. So still pretty wet behind the ears. He played okay against BYU. Obviously, special teams came up huge. Punt return touchdown for Longhorns. Defense was amazing. But Kansas State's a whole nother level from what BYU did. So this is a, you know, this is a tough game. And if Texas wins it at home, which, you know, you look at the athletes, you look at the talent, Texas probably should win at home. But if they do, it's going to be because of that defense. I don't see Murphy and that offense being good enough to win a shootout if this turns into one. I mean, it was 21. You know, they were at 21 points for most of the game. They scored 14 in that fourth quarter to pull away. But, I mean, you know, this game was 21-6 at one point going in the fourth. If BYU was just a little bit better, I think they would have given Texas much more fits. So if Texas wins, it'll be defense and special teams again.
Yeah, and, you know, because that Kansas defense – sorry, I should say Kansas State defense, they're the best scoring defense – in the conference. I mean, they're giving up basically 16 points a game for the season, a tick under 17 for conference games. And so with the backup quarterback, that's something really to worry about a lot for the Longhorns, because this is sort of, they've got to win out in order to even get a chance to sort of redeem that loss that they had to Oklahoma. Otherwise, you know, we're going to see, you know, it would not surprise me at all the way things are shaking out right now to have a, you know, Big 12 championship game that's Kansas State in Oklahoma. That would not surprise me at all. You know, any of these five teams that are up here with one loss, you know, even Iowa State, for all of their issues, they're still 4-1 in conference. So you can't, you know, completely count them out yet, despite having a lot less talent than a lot of these other teams at the top of the Big 12. Speaking of a former Big 12 team, a former rival of Kansas State, Missouri, the boys from Columbia, they're up to number 12 in the polls in that first whatever CFP poll that has Ohio State as the number one team in the country. I don't know who's over there, Coach Jim Cooper. You know, I don't know what's going on with that. That seems a little bit high to me personally, but you know, the Missouri is up to number 12. And so sort of a two-part question for you, Josh, because we don't have Coach here tonight to really talk Georgia. First of all, is Missouri the best team that Georgia will face this regular season? And two, what do you think has accounted for Eli Drinkwitz and the Tigers and their turnaround so far? What's like stood out about that?
Well, I'll tell you what helps Mizzou. They got out of the Big Eight. They don't have to play Colorado and have a ball get kicked into the air. Then they catch it. You know, they're not losing on extra downs, giving the other team five downs. You know, good for Mizzou to get out of there. And then over on Georgia's side, Ray Goof. How does Ray Goof have them number one in the polls? What's going on? I don't know what's going on with this. You know, I'm going to be honest, as Georgia was mounting some injuries, most notably the Brock Bowers injury, as they had kind of that hiccup at Auburn, I was kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. And what have they done? Well, they obliterated Kentucky. They took care of business at Vanderbilt. And then they completely obliterated Florida. They're playing probably their best football of the season at this juncture. And, you know, I think what's going to be interesting for Georgia is, of course, their very next game is another tough one. It's Ole Miss. And then after that, they have their rivalry at Tennessee. I think if this was Missouri of the past, they might be looking by them a little bit. It's going to be hard for those players and that staff to ignore a highly ranked Missouri team, you know, 12th in the nation. It's at home. I think, you know, we've seen more than enough from this coaching staff that they're not going to have a weird hiccup. They're kind of like what Nick Saban has, which makes sense that they're building off that foundation of they really don't beat themselves. So if Missouri is going to do the unthinkable, Missouri is just going to have to play A-plus football in all three phases, because I don't see Georgia, you know, having like a 7-turnover debacle, you know, like they're too talented. They're too well coached. And if they ever did start to get turnover happy, I think they would, you know, shut down the passing game and just be like, hey, let's just run the rock every down and out muscle Missouri. So, you know, I'm not saying Missouri can't win. We've seen some incredible teams have some amazing breakthrough wins. One that I will always fondly remember is when Iowa had their breakthrough season in 2002, Brad Banks and the Hawks went into Ann Arbor. It had been a house of horrors for us for many long time. And we exercised some demons, beating them 34-9. And Iowa was kind of in the same boat as Missouri. We were ranked. We were, you know, the hot thing, but we still had a lot of doubters. And Michigan was expected to do incredibly well that year. And we knocked them off and went from there. So I'm not saying Missouri can't do it. It's just this Georgia team's at a whole nother level. I don't see, you know, it'd be a broken record, but I just don't see Georgia beating themselves, which means Missouri's going to have to play a perfect game.
Yeah, and they're going to have to get probably one or two big special teams plays, probably a broken play or two to Luther Burden, the wide receiver, who is, you know, maybe the one mismatch that they can go after and attack. Because I don't know if there's any corner in the country who can effectively cover him on a play-to-play basis. But it is the game is in Athens. Yeah. It's going to be loud. It's going to be wild. And I still expect Georgia to come out on top of this one. Yeah.
As do I.
Yeah. So let's head to an old Big Eight rivalry in the final edition of Bedlam for the foreseeable future. This will be, without a doubt, one of the best environments of all of college football this weekend. A little extra juice on the line as well. Earlier this week, Cowboy turned Sooner defensive lineman Trace Ford called out Mike Gundy and the coaching staff for the way they treated him and a lot of other players when they even talked about them being potentially considering entering the transfer portal. There were some there's been a little verbal sparring going back and forth between those two parties to add a little bit more fuel to an already raging fire in Stillwater. Pokes are big mad, as the kids are saying these days, Coach. I mean, I don't know if you're keeping up with the youths these days in their lingo, but you know, those guys down there in Stillwater, they're big mad. So what do you think the odds are that the Pokes are able to overcome the Sooners' talent advantage and go out on top in Bedlam?
Well, you know, Pat Jones has had an interesting career down there in Stillwater, you know, 4 bowl games in his first 5 years, but they really struggled. You know, they went 0-10 and won in 1991. You know what we did in 1991? We went to a Rose Bowl. How about that?
How about that?
Anyway, yeah, I mean, this is one of the weirdest games, right? Because it's a rivalry. It's Bedlam. It's like 85-10 for Oklahoma.
Like, it's something absurd like that.
Like, it's unusual. Now, unfortunately for Oklahoma State, they're going to be catching Oklahoma when they are real focused because they just lost to Kansas. And I mean, this team's going to be incredibly, incredibly pissed, right? Yeah. Like,
by the way, 91-19-7.
Yeah. So, like,
yeah.
Like they, if Oklahoma had waxed Kansas, like the Charlie Weiss era, and Oklahoma was coming off like a 73-10 win, we might be like, yeah, okay. Like,
they're kind of sleepwalking and they're just assuming that they're going to win the Big 12 again. But no, like Brent Venables should have that team as focused as they ever will be this season. They're coming off their first loss. And for Oklahoma State, Matt, what do you think of this team? Like,
I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, they're winning games. They're up to 22nd in the polls. But I don't know. Like, they beat Kansas State and Kansas. Two teams that we both think are good teams.
Yeah.
But they lost at Iowa State. They lost at home to South Alabama. They, I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know what to think about this team. I mean, they started the season by struggling with Central Arkansas.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's a befuddling team.
Yeah. I think the one thing that's not befuddling is their rise has come with giving Ollie Gordon the second the rock. Mm. First three games of the season, 7 carries, 9 carries, 3 carries against South Alabama, jumped to 18 carries in a losing effort against Iowa State. Since then, 21 against Kansas State for .136, 29 against Kansas for .168, 29 against West Virginia for .282.
And 4 touchdowns in that one.
Yeah. And 25 against Cincinnati for .271. I think it's pretty obvious what their offense is going to be, which, again, Oklahoma is going to be good and pissed. And Kansas had some success running the ball against them also.
Yeah.
So
Neal had a big game.
Yeah. So I don't like Oklahoma State's odds in this one with just the timing of coming off that Kansas loss. But you know what? It's at home. It's in Stillwater. It's the last bedlam, like you said, in the foreseeable future. This is – I know they're still in contention, obviously, for making the Big 12 title game, but this is Oklahoma State's World Cup, Super Bowl, World Series, Stanley Cup Final Game 7, all wrapped up into one. Like, this is the biggest game in program history. And if they process that, probably the loss at Iowa State when they were making the title run was probably bigger. But anyway, it's a huge ass game for their program. If they can channel those nerves and energy in the right way, Oklahoma's vulnerable. I mean, Oklahoma had some really nice games this year. They did beat Texas, but Kansas exposed a lot of flaws in them also. And, they had a weird game plan also. They've got a idiot offensive coordinator who loves hanging out with Art Briles. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. If you are the company, also, you keep.
Also, hey, Matt, I gotta confess something.
What's that, coach?
I'm getting a little up there in age. I said 1991 we went to the Rose Bowl. We played in the 91 Rose Bowl, but that was coming off the 1990 season. I'm sorry.
It's okay, coach. We'll forgive you on that one.
And then those damn Washington Huskies got us.
The Purple Rain. You never were a Prince fan, were you, coach?
No, I don't like anything from Minnesota.
Didn't think so. All right,
have you ever heard my Minnesota story?
No, tell me your Minnesota story.
Okay, well, actually, I'll just tell this one as me, because it's a real story. Yeah, he told the story many times, but he also told it in his Hall of Fame induction at the University of Iowa, where Iowa won a game up in the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome, as he always called it. He did the full name for it. Iowa is down 10-9. Classic.
As you do.
And line up for a game-winning field goal. And we doink it. But hold on. Flags on the play. Gophers, 12 men on the field. Moved the ball 5 yards closer, hit the field goal, win 12-10, escape. Escape the Hubert Ayers Humphrey Metrodome. As Fry's going out to shake Minnesota coach's hand, the security guard for the Minnesota coach like jumps out, and he's this huge like 6 foot guy, and he yelled at Fry basically like to clean it up. It was basically like, screw you, Fry, like screw your team for winning this game. And then the Iowa security guard kind of got in the way to protect Fry, but Fry says, well, if you dumb gophers could count to 12, you would have won the game.
Oh, God. Oh, coach. Well, coach, I don't know. Did Iowa ever travel down to Bryant-Denny Stadium and play in Alabama?
No. Why would we go on down to Tuscaloosa? That'd just be crazy. Come on.
I don't know how you felt about how you and the bear got along.
Do I remember Iowa ever playing an SEC team? Wow. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, our bowl games, you know, Rose Bowl was Pac-12, Sun Bowl was Big Eight, Alamo Bowl was Big Eight, I think. I don't remember Fry ever playing an SEC team. We probably did along the way, but none off the top of my head.
Well, Iowa and Alabama have actually never faced each other before, Wikipedia.
Iowa did play LSU, not during the Fry era, but gave Saban his last loss at LSU.
Did he really?
He went off to the... Yeah, that was the Capital One Bowl that we won on the final Hail Mary. Tate to Holloway. Oh,
I forgot about that.
Come on.
I forgot about that. I'm terribly, terribly sorry. Okay, well, let's talk, though.
That was my young protege, Kirk Ferentz.
How do you feel about his baby boy, Brian?
Well, you know what? You can't put family ahead of wins. You know, I never had any of my kids on my coaching staff. My kids were Barry, Billy, Danny, Kurt. Those were my family. Those were my sons.
Then Bert. What about Bert?
Bert's dead to me. He went up. He's over there in Champaign. I don't like Champaign, Urbana. It's a cow town. Reminds me of a Texas cow town. I had enough of those when I was down at SMU.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island.
He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, well, let's head down to that aforementioned Alabama team, a game that could ultimately decide the SEC West. LSU actually somehow has like the number one offense in the country now. They've overtaken Washington for points, I think, in total yards per game, putting up huge numbers behind Jaden Daniels. Still, though, they've got two losses on the year, the loss to Florida State, the loss to Ole Miss. Alabama's already lost to Texas. But if LSU wants to stay in contention, they got to win this one at Bryant Denny Stadium on Saturday. It's going to be as loud and as intense as anywhere in the country this weekend. What is the biggest key for LSU to do in order to pull off the upset?
Yeah, I think as much as he's vastly improved, as much as he's had some incredible throws that have really impressed me, Milroe is still a kid, right? You know, he's still adjusting. You know, LSU has a lot of talent. I know their defense has struggled at times this year, undeniably, but I'm curious if Milroe has it to bring Alabama back. Because first half Alabama has been not very good. Like, I mean, it's becoming scary how they've had some really, really, really slow starts. So if LSU gets up 3 or 4 touchdowns, can they do the opposite of what Tennessee did, which is stay in that lead, keep that cushion, really force Milroe to beat him through the air? You know, if it's a 3-touchdown game, late stages of the third, early fourth, LSU can probably just rush 3 and drop 8. And does Milroe have it to pick a secondary apart like that? He's made some incredible throws. He's getting better each week, I think, but I don't know if we've seen that from him just yet. I don't know if he has that in his pedigree. So for LSU to win, they need to hope Alabama has another slow start. They need to use their offense to build a nice big lead, and then don't do the Tennessee thing. Don't get shut out in the second half.
Yeah, that's not very helpful when that happens. All right, let's go back out to the Pac-12 for our final big one of the week. Washington at USC. Josh, with the firing of Brian Ferentz that we haven't even talked about here yet, I thought about doing an emergency pod with you about this when that news came down, which we still should talk about here in a minute. But with that, I think it's pretty fair to say Alex Grinch is the worst coordinator left in major college football, at least at the Power 5 level. So I'm going to keep it simple. How many points will Washington score against USC this weekend, considering they gave up 49 to Cal last week?
What are we talking about USC for? USC ain't been any good since they hired Larry Smith. They're a joke of a program. Washington's the real deal. You know, Washington's going to win at least 2-3 national titles here in the 1990s. You got like, well, Washington's building out there with Coach James up there in Seattle. No one cares about USC. USC's from the 1970s. No one. Let me just say, OJ Simpson ain't walking through that door anymore for USC.
John McKay ain't walking through that door.
No, John McKay ain't walking through that. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm so curious. If Cal had hit that 2-point conversion, was Grinch getting tarmacked? Like, because you could make the argument they gave up 49 points. Like, he probably should have been fired anyway, even in a win. But it's hard to fire a coordinator after a win. So like that Cal might have played 3D chess to help the rest of the league. But yeah, I mean, this is getting laughable. And, you know, obviously for Kirk, this, he had much more leeway because he's had 20 years of leading Iowa to 8, 9, 10 win seasons, tons of bowls, tons of wins. You know, he's sniffing around that Hall of Fame benchmark of 600 career winning percentage. Like, Kirk had that legacy. And, you know, it took 2-3 years of bad offense with his son to finally, like, lose the fan base and get them irate. Lincoln Riley is basically a carpetbagger that most people assume is leaving the first NFL job he gets offered. He does not have that cachet at USC. He has won a lot of games, but never a playoff championship. You know, he's, you know, lost big games. He got drubbed in the Pac-12 title game a year ago and then lost a prestigious bowl game to Tulane. He has none of that cachet. So if I was a USC fan, if I was Bill Plaschke out there typing up articles for the LA Times, like, I'd be going irate. This is, you know, this is supposed to be the Alabama of the Pac-12. This is supposed to be the Ohio State of the Pac-12. And they are a clown operation right now because they are willfully negligent on defense. I mean, this is insane. Like, if Nick Saban had this happen on his Alabama staff, that coordinator would have been fired so quickly already. And USC just was like, you know, whatever. I'm Lincoln Riley. I'm just not going to talk to the media. I'm not going to let any players be available. I'm just going to go and hide.
Because, that was insane.
Because evidently this guy is my best friend and I can't live without him. It's like, well, guess what, Lincoln? He's ruining your career.
He really is. I mean, it's bad. It's really, really bad.
It reminds me of, hey, you know who this reminds me of? Okay, so a little bit before I got to Iowa City, the coaching staff there, you know, this is a true story. The coaching staff just before Fry, like one or two coaches before Fry, the guy had like his best friend as his defensive coordinator, and the athletic director was like, hey, our defense was like DFL in the Big Ten. Like, you got to fire him. And the coach was like, well, I get to retain staff decisions for my coaching staff. And the AD was like, that's true, but I get to retain you. And the coach was like, called his bluff. And athletic director Bump Elliott said, you're gone, get out. And I mean, that's what USC needs to do.
It's bad.
It makes no sense.
It's really bad. It's really bad. Coach Fry, I've done a little research since we've been on the call. You have you've never faced an SEC team in regular season play. However, you've had three matchups against SEC teams in postseason play. Do you know who those teams are? Do you remember who you played?
Oh boy. Well, you know, I'm getting up there in age, so I need a few minutes to think about it. Is this my entire career or just at Iowa?
This is just at Iowa.
Okay, because, you know, I went to a Cotton Bowl there with SMU. I think was the SEC a Cotton Bowl back in the day? I don't know.
More than likely.
I don't know. Okay, well, let's see. Oof. Well, it wouldn't have been any of the Rose Bowls, nope. Obviously. I know Hayden led them to a Peach Bowl back in the day. Peach Bowl seems like it'd be an SEC team. Mm-hmm. How about we took on the Tennessee Volunteers? How about that?
That is correct, Coach. You remember the games that you were in. You were in the Peach Bowl. All right. In the 1982 Peach Bowl against Johnny Majors and the Tennessee Volunteers.
All right. Okay. I know they played a Gator Bowl.
Yes, they did.
I'm going to say we had a tough one. We had to play Florida in the Gator Bowl.
That is correct. The following season, 1983.
Okay.
83 Gator Bowl. And now 1987.
87 Iowa was pretty good, so would have been a decent. Who was decent? I'm trying to think who would have been decent in the late 80s. Let's see. We took
This was not a bowl game. This was a neutral site game to kick off the season. In 87 in East Rutherford at Giant Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Well, when I think of East Rutherford, New Jersey, nothing better than Iowa and LSU.
No, it was those Tennessee Vols again.
Oh, okay.
It was those Tennessee Vols with Johnny Majors again to start to start the 87 season. Would finish in the Holiday Bowl with a victory over Wyoming at Jack Murphy Stadium.
Yeah. Well, unrelated to the SEC matchups, but one of my favorite Fry moments. Unfortunately, I wasn't around for this one. This was even before I was born, but just learning more about Fry over my life. The 1984 Freedom Bowl. Iowa comes in okay. They're like an okay team. They were 7-4-1 on the year. And they're taking on Texas, coached by Fred Akers. Now, basically, Texas never gave Fry the time of day, obviously. And Fry's probably like, well, I'm not going to play Texas too often. So, they dropped 55 on him. 55-17.
I'm sure that made everyone in Austin feel real good.
So...
All right. Well, let's finish up with one, or who knows, up to a six pack for the road, whatever you need. I'm just taking one, and I'm going back to that Pac-12 well once again, except it's not a well drink. This is top shelf stuff you're getting, guys. Even the lesser known stuff, UCLA at Arizona this weekend. I mentioned Noah Fifita a little bit earlier. He has been a revelation in his four starts for the Cats. He is throwing for over 300 yards a game as a starter, has thrown 11 touchdowns to only three picks in those starts. And he's been just doing a little bit of everything, two big wins. He's had four starts against four ranked teams, the last two wins at Washington State, when they trounced them 44-6, and then the win against Oregon State. We know Oregon State is such a good team. Beat them 27-24 last week. He's completing well over 70% of his passes, and the freshman from Huntington Beach is he is so athletic, and he, so their issue is a lot of times on the offensive line, and he's able to escape the pocket, use his legs, not necessarily to run, but to actually find receivers who are breaking off routes downfield. I'm really impressed with them, and I think it's going to be a really good game with UCLA, because UCLA is the best defense that they've faced so far. I think UCLA's defense is proving to be one of the best units on the West Coast. And I think it's going to be a lot like that 27-24 game they played last week versus Oregon State. I think that, the Bruins come into this one ranked 19th, and they're still having some quarterback issues. I think Ethan Garbers is going to start again, but I don't entirely believe that they know who their best quarterback option at quarterback is. They're playing three guys. They're playing Garbers, Moore, and Schley. Schley looked a little bit rough around the edges last week in the Colorado game that I watched. Moore has definitely hit a freshman wall of some. Garbers came in, looked good at times, but also makes some of the mistakes that he's been making for a couple of years in a backup role to DTR, which is why he didn't necessarily win the job coming out of fall camp. But at the end of the day, this is going to be one of the best played games of the weekend. We're going to be one of the closest games of the weekend. I like the Bruins by, you know, a field goal maybe, but I think that is going to be one of the games to watch in some Pac-12 after dark, a late kick, 10:30 Eastern, late kick out there in the desert. So what have you got taking us out of here?
Well, there are three random games that caught my eye, just three this week. First of all, way out there in the world of the Independents, we got two East Coast Independents there, Syracuse and Boston College. There we go. Dino Babers started out 4-0, Matt.
He did.
They are 0-4 in ACC play, yeah, and have lost four straight.
It's bad.
Boston College, despite Halfley being an idiot, it seems like, does anyone like him? I don't, based on everything I see about Boston College, they're not a fan of him. They are at 5-3. Like, if they win this, they're going bowling. And then for, you know, whoever loses, like, just massive panic time for their job security.
Well, Josh, listen to this. In four conference games, like you mentioned, the Orange are 0-4. In four conference games, they've scored a total of 34 points.
It's Iowa-esque.
And they've given up 150.
That's not Iowa-esque.
No, it's not. That is, I mean, that means they're giving up 37.5 a game and they're scoring 8.5 a game. That's not a good ratio.
That'll be a fun Friday oddity to keep my eyes on. My second and third game come from the same league. I don't know what this league is. The Mountain West. Some of these teams, I think, are in the whack, and some of them, I think, are Division One AA. I don't know some of these teams, but I'll tell you what, this UNLV running Reb team, they're not just a basketball school, Matt.
How do you feel about how do you feel about chewing on towels there?
They've already won six games, so they're going to go bowling. But last week they gave Fresno everything they could handle. They had a heartbreaking loss. They dropped a potentially game tying touchdown in the end zone, and then the next play they unfortunately was a fourth and desperation play, and they threw an interception. But they gave Fresno all they could handle. They travel down to Albuquerque. New Mexico is a mess. UNLV can keep pace in the Mountain West. They should drub the Lobos. But the running Rebs, great, great story. And then finally, you know what, man? This team, I don't know who they are. They must be a Division I AA team. Boise State College? They got schools in Idaho? I don't remember. I don't know who they are. Going back to that Fresno team, huge Mountain West showdown, Boise State at Fresno State. That is a fun way to end a Saturday night, 9 p.m. Unfortunately, going to be tough to find. It's on the CBS Sports Network.
The worst. We have DirecTV with a sports package, and we still don't get it.
But it is out there if you can find it.
Good luck to you. Yeah, it's. I've been caught trying to catch random Mountain West games, and they're always on CBS Sports Network, and it always drives me absolutely up the wall. Air Force taking on Army this weekend. Speaking of Mountain West teams, Air Force looking to continue their undefeated season. Army not having the best of seasons so far, especially by their standards. They got the snot kicked out of them by LSU last week. I believe LSU did not respect the troops. It was very sad to see. But they're home for Army this weekend, which should push them to 9-0. And, you know, they finished the year with UNLV and Boise State, Air Force does. But it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, can they run the table? If the Falcons can run the table, you know, what does that mean? They're probably not going to make the CFP if they're undefeated. But, you know, they are definitely one of the better teams in the entire nation. And I think that's, you know, pretty much without question. So that, I think, then is going to do it here for us here today on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. So on behalf of our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton, somewhere here in the greater Nashville area, our other coach, the head coach, Hayden Fry,
I gotta get down over to Hawkeye Barbershop and see my guy Dick to cut my hair.
Over there in Iowa City, Iowa, and our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and Counting, Josh Cook, up there in Chicago, Illinois. This is Matt Perkins in the Music City saying so long, and see you next time on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.